The home of Cambridge music.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour. Many thanks to Tony Barnfield for the last programme. And now we take to the mic to bring you an hour of food and drink. I'm Matt Bentman.
And I'm Sue Bailey. Alan Alder is away this weekend. Today we look forward to the opening dinner of Eat Cambridge, a collaboration between local chef Rosie Sykes and Guardian food writer and Rome resident Rachel Roddy. Lindsay Burkett of the Flock Cafe at Burwash is also contributing to Eat Cambridge. We speak with her and Estefania Led-Ramos of Quirica Tapas too.
We also check out one of Cambridge's newest restaurants, already getting a good reputation. It's Tu Casa on Mill Road. And away from the hustle and bustle of Cambridge, we spend a few tranquil moments at the empty Common Community Gardens, that's just off Brooklands Avenue, and we saunter across to the tea rooms in Grantchester. First, though, Tu Casa. Sue?
Yes, Tu Casa opened in Mill Road 4 weeks ago and has become a very popular destination. It's taken some years to get off the ground, though, as co-owners Roy Vaquero Luches and Elia Polo De Vecchio explained.
Well, Tu Casa is, I think, that it was something that Cambridge needed. I mean, it was a proper Spanish restaurant, tapas and Spanish food. And we had this vision a few years ago, to be honest. Mm.
But it takes time to develop a restaurant yeah. concept.
Yes, it takes time, and Cambridge is really, really difficult. But we are very happy to be here. Right?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Why is Cambridge difficult?
For a new company, independent, it's very difficult to find a place, the right spot, and because yes. there are a lot of companies here with a lot of money. Mm. And so that is the problem, mainly. In the city centre, it's very difficult.
Yes, and rates and yeah. rents are high.
And are crazy. Even that, I mean, if you look around, only big companies, big chains, are able to open restaurants or this kind of business in Cambridge. It's so difficult, it's so expensive, even the landlords are, you know, they can choose. Mm-hmm. You know, and when they can choose, you know, it's like, oh, I rent my property to you guys that are no one, literally, yeah. we know. What I mean is, you know, we don't have millions.
Quite.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, we, and as they can choose, they choose chains. And as you can see in the city center, there are only chains. Mm. Even if they say that they are independent or small businesses, maybe they have 10 different restaurants in other places, and that's the way. Yeah. That's the way they get, you know, the right spots or the best spots in town. Mm.
Took more than 2 years to get here.
More than 2 years to yes. get where you needed to be, yes. But Mill Road is a good location. It's an independent location,
yes.
and there's a lot of people.
We are so happy to be here. We are very happy. Well, because it was not... At the end, you try to get the right spot for you, thinking... But at the end, you cannot... Sometimes you cannot choose. You have to take what you get.
For people who haven't yet visited Tu Casa, just describe a little bit about the ambience, the atmosphere, what you're trying to create.
The idea is in the name, Tu Casa, your home.
Your home, I love that, yes. yes.
Yeah.
So be friends, be friendly here. I was eating here last week and there was a lovely vibe. There was brilliant sort of chat. Tertulia, I gather.
Tertulia, yeah.
Yes, and that is a lovely word for companionship, friendship, yeah. getting together.
That's what was the idea when we chose the name as well, Tu Casa. It's like, come here, feel at home. Mm. We will treat you like you are, you know, you are our guest, you know, so we will make everything, anything to make you happy. You know, and that was from the very beginning, food that I can eat at home, my grandma's house. You could have a meal there with the same food that we are serving, same recipe, yeah. and yeah, that was the whole idea about making this restaurant.
So, what would you say are your sort of key dishes, and did you have problems deciding what are going to be our best dishes?
Well.
It was not easy. It was not easy because, of course, it's, you know, you are trying to get the same flavors, the same, And it was not easy because we don't have the same products. We spend a lot of time cooking, trying. This is perfect. Okay, perfect. It goes in the menu. Yeah. Mm. Move on. Another thing. Mm, it's not good enough. Let's try again. Or, yeah, it was a long...
We've done a lot of cook-off with friends, with Spanish people that know the flavor of the food and the taste. And so we've done a part. We decide, okay, this is good. There's not. We have to improve this one. But we are still improving. We always ask the guest, you know, if they like, what they like, what is not, you know. And step by step, we are in the process of improving, you know. And
And trust me, when we ask, it's not about, you know, this kind of points of service that we ask because we have to. No, we ask because we want... You know,
want genuine feedback.
Yeah, we want to know.
Yeah.
Mm. Our food, a lot of our customers are English. They haven't tried some of the things. It's the first time in their life. So it's what do you think? What do you like? I mean, how was the flavor? It was cooked nice for you? I mean, it's our way of cooking, but we are in England. Mm. So we have to, you know, you cannot be so...
flexible.
So, you know.
Yeah, so get... encourage people to try new things.
Yes. Yeah, of course.
So what would you say are your favourite dishes for yourselves, and what are your customers' favourites so far?
Oh my God.
Tapas.
Tapas is... our tapas are, you know... Because we do paella as well.
Yes. Ah, okay.
Paella, freshly cooked for you. Mm. It takes 30-35 minutes to get it on the table because... You can't hurry it.
No.
Paella is paella. Mm.
You get the pan on the table, you can see it, you can smell it, serve it yourself on the plate. But so far, I think tapas in general, people are loving.
And good tapas is difficult to find. No, I tried two of your tapas, which were albondigas, which are meatballs in a lovely spicy sauce. And they were perfect, as good as I've tried anywhere in Spain. In fact, nicer than some of my favourite places in Spain. And then croquetas de jamón, which basically, if people don't know what they are breadcrumbed, white sauce-filled croquettes, but flavoured with jamón, which is the Spanish ham. Mm. And again, they take time to make those.
Well, the preparation takes a lot of time.
It's a very traditional tapas.
Many restaurants in Spain, they avoid to make, for example, croquetas. They don't want to. It's so hard. It takes hours and hours. You might have to make them one by one, by hand. And they avoid it. And it was an idea that we had from the very beginning. We need to have them because I know that people will love them. All our tapas, they take a lot of time to get ready.
And you've got a nice bar area as well, haven't you? And you've got some jamón there. I can see it at the end of the counter, ready to be carved. Yeah. Again, that's something that's so characteristic of Spain. But good jamón is important to have it, the fat right, the meat right, and everything good.
Yeah. You know, if people want to try real jamón, the jamón that we eat in Spain is this jamón.
And do you have to book up to come and eat in tu casa?
During the weekends, if you want to pay us a visit, it's better if you book a table. You will be sure that you will have, because
You've been busy.
We are very busy.
But you have seating area around the bar as well. Yeah. And if people are lucky enough to walk in, which I did, we got the last table. You made us space, so that was perfect.
Obviously, we tried to make it. We have this bar area with a couple of barrels, stools. You know, you can sit down, enjoy a glass of wine with a small tapa, wait for your table, sit down and enjoy the whole experience.
And they have a good selection of wines and beers at Tu Casa too, including Galicia's favourite beer and three wines from the same region. If you want some advice on what wine to have with your food, or what food to have with your wine, they are very happy to give it.
Yeah, sounds like a good place.
Really enjoyed it. Very authentic.
Well, moving on now to Eat Cambridge. It begins on the 18th of May, as we all know, and the first night features a dinner cooked by Rosie Sykes and Rachel Roddy. Alan Alder asked Rosie about the menu and how she got to know Rachel.
I talked to Heidi and we decided to do an opening dinner to celebrate the opening of Eat. And I have been trying to set up this charity supper club, so it felt like a really great collaboration. So we're doing a supper at Winter Comfort in their refectory to raise money for them and to celebrate the food festival. So it's all about raising awareness and having a convivial, lovely time.
Right. And where is Winter Comfort?
Its headquarters are just by Mitcham's Corner, so Victoria Avenue, right by the bridge. And the refectory is really great. It's a really lovely space. So I think we can fit about 50 people in there. And we're getting a lot of help and support from Winter Comfort, as well as from lots of other local people.
So any idea what's going to be on the menu if you...
Well, it's quite interesting because Winter Comfort have quite a big dry stores, and they have a fantastic man who works the British Antarctic Survey who volunteers for them, who keeps it in incredible order. So he was able to send me a list of everything that was in the dry stores that they haven't used or don't use. So quite a bit of it is based around that, as well as making it lovely spring and seasonal. So I was talking to Rachel, who lives in Rome, and one of the things they seem to have a lot of is risotto rice. So we're going to start the proceedings with a sort of spring risotto, hopefully with asparagus and peas and Jack by the Hedge, which I have a lot of around my house, that kind of thing.
Right, just in case people don't know, that's a wild flower, isn't
it? Yeah, it's a wild garlic. It's garlicky tasting. It has another name, not wild garlic, but it's something like wild false garlic or something like that. But it is abundant around me, which is great. And I'm hoping there'll still be wild garlic around, so a nice little risotto. And before that, when everyone arrives, we're going to give them all an amusette. And I'm doing a riff on a kimchi pancake, because there's a lot of sauerkraut in the Winter Comfort dry stores. So we're going to make a little sauerkraut pancake and serve it with a lovely dipping sauce when everybody arrives as their treat. Then the main course, we're hoping to be able to do lamb, perhaps sort of stuffed breast of lamb, because obviously because we're trying to raise money, we're trying to use cheaper cuts. And they had some farro in the dry stores, which is a grain that's very like pearl barley. It's a pearlized grain. They use it in Italy a lot. So we thought we'd make a stuffing for the lamb breast with farro and nettles and lemon and lots of delicious flavours to cut through the sort of fattiness. Then we'll braise that. And then we're going to rely on what any lovely vegetable growers might be able to give us as our accompaniment. And finally, we're going to make some meringues, maybe elderflower meringues with almonds. And then, of course, generous Jack's Gelato is going to give us some ice cream to go with the meringues. So that's the very vague plan at the moment. It will probably firm up a bit more depending on what people can donate to us. Yeah. But that's our basis.
Right. When you say elderflowers, you're not talking about the elderflowers direct from the bush, because will they be out?
Yeah, I think they should be in the middle of May. They'll be starting. Either we'll put them into the meringues or we might poach some rhubarb or something. We'll see. But I hope they'll be out. And if the weather carries on like this, they will definitely be out.
Yes, that's true. Right, now you mentioned Rachel. So this is Rachel Roddy that you're doing this with.
That's correct. Rachel Roddy, who is a Guardian columnist and writer of wonderful books about Italy. She's a girl from St Albans who has lived in Italy for, I think, about 10 years.
So how do you know her then?
So I went to Rome several years ago with a friend who had worked at the American Academy in Rome, which is a very famous place, which if you are in Rome, I believe on one day a week, the general public can go and eat at, but it has a very incredible kitchen and dining room that's normally run by someone who has worked at Chez Panisse in Berkeley, in San Francisco. So the cooking there is incredible and the food culture there is amazing. And my friend had been working there and she had met Rachel, who was at that time writing a blog about food in Rome, central Rome. Rachel lives right in the centre of Rome in Testaccio and writes beautifully about it. And she and I have collaborated. I've cooked with her for both her book launches, but we've always wanted to do something more concrete, and this felt like a really fantastic opportunity.
Well, it sounds, and it's a great opportunity for the people of Cambridge as
indeed.
Well.
Indeed, yes, that's right.
To enjoy it. There's a corkage on, you bring
yes.
your own wine, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, we decided to do bring your own wine because actually for us it's a bit more hassle to order wine and choose the right wine, and it's much nicer for people to bring their own. And Thirsty is just round the corner, so it's a good opportunity to go and try out some of their lovely wines. And also, then what we're asking is that people give a donation of £5 or more for us opening the wine and them enjoying it at our supper.
And have you got any thoughts on what wine you think would go well with a meal?
Italian, probably. For me, I'm a big fan of sort of Southern French, and I feel that with all those springy flavours, or a Savoir even, which is, they have a lot of Savoir wines at Thirsty, those kind of quite acidic whites would be really perfect with all those courses, I think, but to cut through the richness. And if it's lovely warm weather, you'll be gulping it back, I would have thought. One will be gulping it back.
It sounds better and better. Right. Thanks very much, Rosie.
Thank you, Alan.
Something well worth looking forward to. Thanks.
Thank you.
Well worth looking forward to indeed. And a reminder that it's on 18th of May. It costs £35 and you can book via the Eat Cambridge online programme. It's called Spring Supper. Here's news of free food available now in Cambridge, which you can find on the Olio app.
Yeah, and Lorena in Chesterton Road. This is a real steal, this one. She's got stacks of pret-a-manger baguettes and sandwiches to give away. So this involves, say, 8 prosciuttos, 2 times tuna, 3 times posh cheddar, 3 times chicken salad, 2 times avocado and tomato. That's just the prosciutto, not including the sandwiches. There's too many of those to mention. They're all free. They're going away. They're available today until 2 p.m. So do be quick if you can.
Wow.
Yeah, so if you want to find that, get onto the Olio app quick. It's that's just
that's amazing. Yum.
Connecting our city and South Cambridgeshire. Cambridge 105 Radio.
Now, moving on, I was looking through the Transition Cambridge website recently, and I saw a page about the Empty Common Community Gardens. Now, for anyone who doesn't know, Transition, they are a group. They focus on sustainability, ethical growing of produce, reducing travel miles by growing food locally. In fact, anything and everything that challenges energy prices and climate change. Now, there are hundreds of transition groups in towns across the country. Cambridge is one such town, and the Empty Common Community Garden is one of their initiatives. So I went along to check it out, and I met with Charlotte and various members who gather there every Sunday.
Here's one of these horsetails.
Yeah, they're just coming out of the ground now.
Still, we've got the upper hand. And they've got the lower tail.
We're just down the end of Brooklands Avenue, opposite the Botanic Garden. This garden is running alongside the conduit.
Yes, yeah, so there's Hobson's Conduit on one side, Vickers Brook on the other side. Mm. We're surrounded by water and trees.
Yes.
What could be better in the middle of Cambridge? You wouldn't really know it was the middle of Cambridge, would you?
No, you wouldn't.
No.
I mean, aside from...
apart from the odd plane, yeah, no control over those things.
This is Charlotte Singh, the organiser.
I suppose I gardened quite a bit as a child, but I was more interested in animals. But then I did a degree in environmental biology. But I found myself sort of spending a lot of time in the lab, and I need to be outside. And I was just too much in the lab, so I thought, well, I'll start gardening.
Yeah.
I'm into permaculture, like Dave Fox.
Mm-hmm.
So really, I suppose I'm a permaculturist, an environmentalist and a gardener. It's not just one thing.
Have we missed anything?
That's my horse impersonation. Part of this garden is about promoting the ideas of permaculture, sustainable ways of doing things.
It's an incredible design. I'd love to slowly learn more about it, and especially how the plants are placed as well, because I'm sure that's very, really key around this garden. Yeah.
Look at nature and copy it a bit instead of trying to work over it. If we work with it, then life can be a lot easier. So that's where I come from, and that's why I actually am involved with this garden, is to promote.
Can we have a little walk around? This is quite a big site.
very well organised and structured.
When the site was empty 5 years ago, there was some people wanting a community space and some people wanting allotments, and it ended up as a compromise.
Yes.
It's all right, we'll get on.
It's not only a garden, it's a community garden.
That is the most important thing about it. And it's full of people who all do different things.
All these can go, yeah?
No, these must stay.
What are these?
You know, someone really likes sowing seeds, someone really likes digging. It makes the whole thing work better than it would as an individual. I mean, the sum is greater than...
The whole is greater than the sum of its parts. It's
definitely.
Yeah.
I wonder who puts the tune in the blackbird.
And that's Ira from South Africa.
Over 80, digging away.
Probably the female blackbirds inspire them, I think.
Yeah.
But they don't sing.
They don't have to.
At least we don't have to sing to the men to attract them.
Ira was down here. She spent about 4 hours in the pouring rain.
Oh, wow.
Gardening down in that damp, dank corner. And then at the end of the day, I said, Ira, you're soaked through. And she said, but I am waterproof, you know.
Now, that's another thing South Africans always say, ach.
Ach.
Because
ach.
That's Dutch. Afrikaans.
Ach. Ach.
Oh, well, yeah, ach. Dutch, baby. It's just, oh, you know, you British say, oh, dear. We say, ach, man.
I've got another over 80-year-old Peter who loves digging. Yeah, we have a huge number of people of different abilities.
Yes,
that's what
yes.
works. Come and join. We're doing a radio thing.
Oh,
the dog wants to sing a song.
Hello, you. Oh, you're gorgeous.
She's really good with the community radio.
Is she?
She is. She plays all sorts of instruments.
Oh.
And songs she sings is extraordinary. There we are.
Not bad for a dog.
What a beautiful dog.
So Ian was instrumental in getting this garden going.
Oh, well, I know. I was just one of the individuals
yes.
that encouraged the City Council to provide a space for the community to work collaboratively. Well, I think even the City Council officers have been amazed by how well it's gone.
I mean, this was just a sea of mud
yeah.
5 years ago.
You'll never grow in that area. Mm. It's waterlogged.
And it's lovely now. It's a proper place, yeah.
I went up to my knees.
Oh, wow. What?
Yeah, when I was measuring it out. And they brought a digger in, and the digger just went down. And they had to get another digger in to get the digger out.
You know, the group with Charlotte's supervision has persevered, and it's gone from strength to strength. In fact, the council have given us more space.
Yeah.
Yes.
Excellent.
And more members show up, from two-year-olds through to 82-year-olds, young at heart. It's really good.
Well, here we are in the polytunnel.
This is, it's probably 3 years old. The gardens will be 5 years in the summer.
So right now all the seed beds are empty and left to sit for a little
They're
while.
They're ready. They've been manured and composted.
Mm.
Now they need watering because the seeds will go in today, really. So every week I just put out a thing saying, any volunteers? And usually someone says, I can do Wednesday or I can do Thursday.
Yeah.
And some people think maybe we should have a rota. But actually, people's lives are so variable.
What's going to be grown in here, in the polytunnel?
OK, so last year was tomatoes and peppers on that side. This year will be cucumbers. Every year we try aubergine. Every year they flower and they never fertilise and we never get an aubergine. So we're giving up on that. Exploding cucumbers we usually end up growing because they seed themselves. They look like little pufferfish.
Yeah.
Little sort of soft, thick spines like pufferfish do. And when they get really ripe, if you touch them, they explode and all the seeds jump out.
Oh.
In midsummer,
yeah.
plants will be up, creeping across. And sometimes we have small pumpkins and they'll be growing up and hanging off there. Yeah, there's some nice pictures on the blog of all the things growing, yeah. Chili peppers, of course, basil. This is some baby rhubarb, which is an interesting rhubarb. It's called Livingston.
Mm-hmm.
And most rhubarb you eat in the spring. And then the oxalic acid levels in it get very high, and then you don't eat it in late summer. And this one doesn't, you start eating it late summer.
Mm.
So it's going to fill in the rhubarb gap. But theoretically, I haven't tried it. They're about, 3 inches tall?
We'll
give it a chance.
Like...
This is an experiment. Yeah.
Okay, shall we head out?
Yeah.
I'm really gutted because last night was such a gorgeous red sky, and I always live by the old adage
of... Red sky at night, yes.
Yeah, shepherd's delight. And then what happens today? rain and...
It's miserable. And it feels miserable too. It's not cold.
No,
but it
no.
just feels sort of all huddled, yes.
So there's quite a few things that are growing at the moment. Well, you've got rhubarb going on the go.
Do you know you can hear rhubarb growing?
I did not know that,
yeah.
No.
So you know when it's got those lovely, great, big, sort of tight buds and they go... as they burst open a little bit more. Yeah, yeah.
They're not just doing impressions of you, are they?
No. That's me doing an impression of rhubarb.
Charlotte can do a range of impressions of different plant noises. Yeah. Sweet peas are her best. The wild garlic noise. You make as well
as I'm not doing that one, not even for the radio.
1, 2, 3, 4...
When you look at the website for this place, it says you're an organic garden, so therefore you still need to combat pests. So how do you fend them off?
We've tried coffee, might work slightly. We've tried ash around them, and doesn't work great. Slugs are really persistent little beasts. We accept that's part of permaculture. We have these three ethics, you know, sort of earth care, people care, and fair shares. And the slugs get their fair share. I think it's fair to say that. But some of the plastic bottles have a copper strip around them.
Oh, yes.
Because slugs don't like copper. They short out, basically, as bits of their body go over it, sort of, apparently. I think they get a horrible tingling.
They also employ wildlife to keep order in the garden.
Because it's the wildlife that controls the pests. So
we've
got slug problem. So we put in some hedgehog boxes. In that ash tree up there, we've got bat box. Hopefully they'll eat all the codling moth. We won't get maggots in our apples, yeah. I mean, blue tit family will eat thousands of aphids in a season and loads of little caterpillars and things. So why not keep them? We've got an old teapot up there, which we hope will become a wren box. We're trying to get the ivy to grow round it. This piece of land mimics Woodland Edge, the sort of land that fruit trees normally grow in. So we've got a morello cherry, a cooking apple, plum, and a pear tree with the hawthorn, which is like the forest edge with big trees, smaller trees, fruit bushes, then ground cover and leafy greens like the rhubarb. This is a creeping raspberry here. And in the end, this garden should need very little maintenance because it'll have all the ground cover. And so the soil will be able to build up all the time and become better soil.
It's its own little ecosystem, then?
It's a self-serving sort of system. So there's also nitrogen fixers to fix nitrogen from the atmosphere, and that will go into the soil, and then the fungi, hyphae, through the soil will be able to distribute that.
One quick question. At the foot of some of the beds, you've got a tennis ball on a stick. What's the significance?
That's just stop you poking your eye out when you look down.
Ah.
It's very easy to poke your eyes out when you look down. So if they're tall, it doesn't matter, but if they're just bangs, that's a safety thing.
And this is Francis.
I've been meaning to come here for a couple of weeks. Of course, you meet the most wonderful people here, and then makes it super easy.
Have you done anything like this before?
Yeah. I used to live up in Scotland for a while. I was quite involved in a community garden up there. So I've really been looking for another garden to get involved with. There's definitely a joy to both the community part and the gardening part, yeah. La, 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 la.
Charlotte was telling me you've just given up your own allotments.
Well, I gave... Oh, there's an orange tip. What is it? No, it's a white one. I thought it was an orange tip. I had to give up a quarter of my allotment.
Yeah.
Since then, I've had a small stroke, so I feel more restricted. But I love allotments and gardens and miss it so much. I thought, well, I'll see what empty common's like and see if I can't find a niche here.
Because I saw you sitting over by the nice log there where they put in the pond and everything.
That's right. It's just got so much going for it, and it's less regimented than a lot of allotment sites. I think it's really gorgeous, and I hope I can find a little, you know, a little home here.
So we're Empty Common Community Garden on the corner of Brooklands Avenue and Trumpington Road, just opposite the Botanic Gardens. There's a sort of grassy area there, and then there's allotments, and we're right at the far end of that.
I like the more you learn about all these different kind of plants, the more you realise that there's not really such thing as a weed.
If you want to come and join us, it's good to come on Sunday at 10:30 to meet everyone, because that's when we garden as a group.
So you don't have to do any work.
Yeah.
That's, you know, obviously people like pottering and working as well. You know, it's not as good opportunity just to come here and mix with people and just enjoy the space.
Mm.
You can find your little niche in the group, really. That's what it's about, so that you have your own ability to do what you're interested in. Because it's not about, I'm trying to think how to say this, it's about having possession of, not being possessive, but having your place in the garden. If you're an artist, you know, do some art stuff. If you're a cook, bring some cake.
Lovely. Well, thank you very much, Charlotte.
Sorry, I got a bit confused at the end there. But never mind.
You know, it's a beautiful garden. That feature is just a hint of the ideas and the inventiveness that they've got on show there. And the people were all great too. As you'll have heard, one of the key aspects of the empty common community garden is permaculture. And a simple definition of that is, looking after the earth naturally, no pesticides, just smart ideas like the hugel culture bed, the forest garden, using local predators to keep the pests down, that sort of thing.
All information about the community garden and their permaculture methods are available via their website at transitioncambridge.org. From there, just look for the Empty Common Community Garden. There's a link straight to it on their homepage.
You may have heard a few bees buzzing around in the background of that feature too. Charlotte and co. have a few beehives on site, as well as special hives for solitary bees. And these are the bees that pollinate the plants and include breeds like the woolcarder bee, the masonry bee, the leafcutter bee.
And the George Lazen bee.
Wouldn't it be great if that one was real? The good news that was announced on Friday was that the EU has agreed to an almost total ban on bee-harming neonicotinoid insecticides. This comes from an article on the BBC website that states that the UK has finally got behind the ban, along with other countries, and this kind of represents the notion that perhaps we're moving forward now toward a different type of farming, one that farms with nature, not necessarily against it.
The very ideals of the community garden.
Indeed.
And our bees will be happy too.
Yeah. Now, the Flock Cafe at Burwash Manor is also involved in Eat Cambridge, and Sue, you went along to find out the details from owner Lindsay Burkett, but first they talked about the cafe.
This is the most fantastic place here. I'm sure an awful lot of people in Cambridge know about Burwash, but just say a little bit more about the cafe and what it's like here.
So we've had the cafe for 2 years at Burwash. We've tried to keep it in keeping with being on a farm, so it's filled with plants and it's quite rustic. The idea behind our food is that we make everything here, so all our scones, sausage rolls, quiches, everything's made fresh daily in the morning. And we try and source our ingredients as locally as possible, as much as we can take from the farm when that's in season.
And in terms of your suppliers, are most of those local as well?
So yes, we try and use as many local suppliers as we can. We use Kell and Damson, which are a local supplier. They source from all over East Anglia. We've just recently got an ice cream bike. Get all our ice cream from the Norfolk Creamery. We have pork that's grown on the farm, well, reared on the farm, that we use whenever is ready to go. There's also a local organic grower on the farm called Dynamic Organics, and we use his produce whenever he has things ready to go for us.
That sounds really, really nice. And what's the interior like? It's actually really green and vibrant. It's fun, isn't it?
Yeah, so we've got lots of hanging plants and lots of window plants, which actually are all grown, taken from the florist here at Burwash Manor, who look after them for us. So yeah, we try and bring a little bit of the outdoors indoors.
And you've also got a lovely outdoor seating area, haven't you?
We do, yes. We've got a lovely big patio, which has some nice big umbrellas on, which is great for the summer. Everyone can sit outside and it's in full sun all day. So yeah, it's really lovely, particularly towards the evenings.
Mm.
It's a really, really nice place to sit.
And also you have had a pizza oven, which I gather is coming back soon.
Yes. So we do handmade sourdough pizzas. Everything's made by scratch and the dough is given at least 24 hours to rise. At the moment we're having our patio extended extended so that we can have a proper structure built to house the pizza oven. So yes, that will be back shortly, and that's great for summer weekends on the patio eating some pizza.
So what time are you open from and until then?
So we're open 9 till 5 every weekday and 10 to 4 on Sundays, and hopefully once our pizza oven's back we'll look at opening some weekend evenings for pizza night.
And I gather you're involved in Eat Cambridge as well.
We are, yes. So for the first time we're going to be part headline sponsors along with Burwash Larder. So yes, we've got lots of events going on over that couple of weeks. So it starts on the 19th and we'll have a stall in the Guild Hall with lots of our canapes, because we also do some outside catering business. Oh. So we'll have that there to show people. There'll be a cinema night at Burwash Manor as part of Eat Cambridge, which is on the 25th of May, and on the 26th of May is Asparagus Day. And then in the beginning of June, on the 2nd of June, we'll be hosting a supper club, which is a very regional. We try to keep everything that all of our menu is sourced here from the farm for that. And then the Sunday after that, which is the 3rd, it will be Sizzling Sunday, which is a big outdoor festival at Burwash. So yeah, a lot going on over that couple of weeks.
Wow, you're going to be really, really, really busy. Oh, help! But I'm sure I've been to some of your events before here at Burwash. And it's absolutely fantastic. There's a lovely vibe and a lovely atmosphere, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. Yeah, it's really nice. And hopefully the weather will be great because everyone sits outside on the grass. There are various other food vans and things coming as well. So it kind of makes a bit of a festival feel. And I think people really enjoy it. It's very kid-friendly, very dog-friendly. So, yes, yeah, it's open to everyone. And we hope lots of people come down and enjoy it.
That sounds fantastic. Do some of these things need to be booked online, or do you just turn up?
Mostly you can just turn up for them. The supper club needs to be booked online, and also the tickets for the open air cinema need to be booked online. But Sizzling Sunday and Asparagus Day are open to everyone, so everyone can just turn up.
Fantastic. And I know I've been along to both the Asparagus Days and the Sizzling Sunday before, and it's such, as you say, it's such a lovely atmosphere, and there's lots of parking as well, isn't there, here? So people, but of course, obviously in Cambridge people often be on their bikes, but
yes, that's true. Yeah, there's lots of parking here, and we open up more of the field, so there's and there'll be parking attendants, so yeah, it's really easy for people to come, and all the parking's free, so it's a great way to come down with the family.
And if people don't know exactly where Burwash is, you're not far outside Cambridge at all, are you?
No, we're not far outside Cambridge. I think it's really easy for people to come to, and it's an easily cyclable distance, and we're just off the M11 as well, which I think is quite great for people to be able to reach us.
Yeah, so it's in the village of Barton, which is I think less than 3 miles outside Cambridge. Yeah. So easily cyclable, in fact. Yeah. Which is really, really nice. Yes. Why the name Flock Cafe?
So we were trying to decide on a name when we opened the cafe, and the dictionary states that flock is animals coming together to eat. So we thought that, given that we're on a farm and there are flocks of sheep, we thought that that was fairly appropriate.
So now we know. That was Lindsay Burkett from The Flock Cafe. And that music signals time for the latest flu tweets from the city.
It certainly does. And the Mitre pub on Bridge Street, they are determined to beat off this dismal weather we've got at the moment. They are taking photos of a selection of gin cocktails of various colours, looking very bright and attractive.
And the Wandering Yak is offering free samples, but taste their dips and dals already at Toff today. Yum, I think I'm going to go straight along there.
Good. Before you do, though, Aromia celebrating 5 years in Cambridge Day. I remember being at the opening with Alan and Ruth. It doesn't feel like 5 years ago. But anyway, they are doling out free cookies with any order. That's while stocks last. And back for a quick moment to Eat Cambridge, where Estefania Led Ramos is involved both at the main event and elsewhere.
You are going to be at Eat Cambridge?
Yes. Yeah.
And you have a stand there?
Yeah, I will have a stand there to showcase the food that I cook,
the service that I offer. There will be some tapas that people can taste and come by if they want to have a lunch with tapas that day. And I'm organizing as well a fringe event with Cambridge Wine Merchant at Cherry Hinton Road, that it will be a cocktail and tapas night. It's the 25th Friday, 25th of May, Friday at 7 p.m. And the tickets will be on sale soon.
Excellent.
Oh, that's brilliant. It will be fun. I mean, and it's the classic cocktails like Manhattan or Martini, Cosmopolitan. I match them with Spanish flavors. So I customize some tapas that, you know, pair properly with the flavors of the cocktails.
I think that really will be fun.
Yes.
That sounds really fun. I think I'll definitely be coming along.
Of course.
Yeah, I think I might have to get along there too.
Well, our final feature today takes us to Garanchester.
Yes, the Orchard Tea Rooms. I met with owner Charles Bunker and had a great couple of days recording with him. You know, at one point we just lay out against the sun and recorded whilst all the other people were around us having their clotted cream and jam scones. It was really everything you'd want from a Cambridge summer, and I really hope it comes back. So fingers crossed that we do see that sun again soon. In the meantime, have a bit of a listen to this.
Oh, the factories may be roaring with the boom-a-lacka, zoom-a-lacka wee, but there isn't any roar when the clock strikes four. Everything stops for tea.
Oh, a lawyer. So what we're trying to do here is maintain in the orchard a corner of England where time stands still as the outside world rushes by.
Gorgeous sunny day. Everybody is out.
We want people to relax and enjoy the gentle setting, where more famous people have taken tea than probably anywhere else in the world.
I only know that you may lie day long and watch the Cambridge sky, and flower lulled in sleepy grass, hear the cool lapse of hours pass, until the centuries blend and blur in Grantchester, in Grantchester.
So I live just up the road in Trumpington. I've just been out on a 40k bike ride, taking in the summer sunshine. Just stopped in at the Orchard Tea Rooms for a nice cup of tea and a scone with jam and lots of clotted cream.
Well, we have 300 and something deck chairs out.
Okay.
And everyone is taken.
Bring tea for the man, steak for the sun.
I'm Charles Bunker. I'm the director of the Orchard Tea Garden. The orchard was first planted in 1868. A group of Cambridge students asked Mrs. Stevenson of Orchard House if she would serve tea beneath the blossomed fruit trees rather than was as usual on the front lawn of her garden. They were unaware that on that spring morning, they'd started a great Cambridge tradition.
It's very relaxing. You know, you can understand why people have been spending their time up here for the last 200 years or so.
Very little has changed in the orchard since then. In order to supplement their income, the Stevensons took in lodgers at Orchard House. And in 1909, a young graduate of King's College, Cambridge, took up residence. His name was Rupert Brooke. Brooke had fallen in love with the idyllic life in Grantchester. On a trip to Berlin, he wrote one of his best-known poems, The Old Vicarage at Grantchester.
And little kindly winds that creep round twilight corners, half asleep.
Well, I first started coming to the orchard 15 or 16 years ago when I was down here as a postgrad. I now live on the north coast of Scotland, and I've come down to visit friends, but we always come down here. I love coming down here so much. It's so nice to be able to sit underneath the apple blossoms and have a nice cup of tea and homemade cakes, and it's just the atmosphere of the orchard. It's not one of these generic places where everything's standardised. It's homemade, it's a lovely atmosphere, you have children running around. It's just such a relaxing place to come to.
So we walked into the Orchard Tea Rooms from Cambridge City Centre, and I couldn't believe the number of people there were punting up the river. It was brilliant.
Oh, is the water sweet and cool? Gentle and brown above the pool.
So you said that you've come back here after being away for 10 years.
That's right. We now live in Arizona. We lived here in Cambridgeshire for a little while, but this was one of our favorite places to come. but it was such a quintessential English place with so much history. We absolutely love it.
When we lived here, we didn't have children yet, and now we've got two little boys, and we wanted to bring them back to some of our favorite places, and top on the list was the Orchard.
And what have you been having here today?
Well, of course, we have to have the clotted cream and a fruit scone with some jam. And some Earl Grey.
The typical.
Yeah, yeah.
We're in fact very proud. Our scones are made here every day. The chefs actually arrive here very early in the morning. They make the scones. They also make the bread. The bread that goes with the soup is all homemade here. And it's one of the reasons that we stop serving our light lunches at 3 o'clock, because we need our chefs to start building the next batch of scones for the afternoon teas. So it is the one thing, you know, the scones are made freshly every day. The cream specially comes from Cornwall. They're large cartons. We could certainly make money by scooping out industrial cream, but we choose the cream because it's the largest carton that we can get our cream from. The jam is Triptree Dram from the Triptree Farm in Essex. So, yeah, we take quite a lot of pride in the ingredients. And we have a fantastic group of chefs. Honestly, today, beating out under this wonderful May sun, we have to remember that while we're sitting under these beautiful trees, there is a team in there working damn hard to making sure that everybody else has a nice Sunday afternoon. So to my team in the kitchen, I praise them very highly and I say thank you very much.
And Arizona compared to this, my only frame of reference is the Nicolas Cage film.
Oh, Raging Arizona, right, yeah. But it's 100 degrees now there. So this is just a really nice, it's like for of spring, yeah, in Arizona.
Have a cup of tea.
In 1987, the Orchard closed so that the land could be developed for residential housing. In 1992, however, it was acquired by a guy called Robin Callan. Robin Callan lived in Orchard House and he could not bear the thought of the Orchard being lost. But thanks to a loan from Midland Bank, he was able to come to a deal with his tax man, because that's really where he'd taken the money from in order to buy here, pay his tax bills, and really save this place for England. So he really was a buccaneering guy. He died about 2 years ago and was so passionate about here remaining forever England that under his will, he's given the Orchard Tea Gardens, so the land that's here and the land that comprises Orchard House, into a charitable trust. So, as he says, it can never be redeveloped. Robin loved the rustic wild growth of the orchard. To quote from his maintenance policy, "The Orchard Tea Garden is neither an orchard nor a tea garden. It's a nature reserve where people can take tea. Only the absolute minimum of pruning is permitted." This was not my chosen occupation. Robin Callan was my uncle. And so when he became poorly with Parkinson, and in the latter years, it became my responsibility. And so it remains today. So, as I say, the land's owned by charitable trustees, but the day-to-day operation remains in my hands, along with a wonderful general manager and a team to look after everybody.
Hi, my name's Liz, and I'm having a lovely cup of tea with my friend Teresa. Recently, I lost my father. She asked if I might like to come out and just take stock after making the funeral arrangements. So I said, where shall we go? Because we like our tea rooms. It's by the river, birdsong, the trees are in blossom. So that's what we did. I think we've now been here 3 hours. We've had lunch, tea, we've polished off a bottle of something non-alcoholic, and we've been serenaded by a robin sitting in the tree. And just telling Teresa how much my dad used to like taming the birds in his garden. Oh, can you hear the birthday celebrations? Oh, that's nice. So, yeah, it's a lovely place, the Orchard Tea Rooms. We're very lucky as locals to be able to come and visit it when we fancy. Oh.
He keeps talking to you.
Oscar. Hey, Oscar.
So you're here today with Oscar, who's a lovely tricolour sheepdog.
Yes, he gets a walk and we get a cup of tea and everyone gets to sit in the sun for a bit.
Yeah, when it's a nice day, you can come down and they do really nice scones here and the tea is good and the dog always likes to go down to the river and he jumps in and it's just fun for everyone to be here.
Isn't that right, Oscar? It's a good boy. It's a good boy.
It's just such a nice thing to do on a sunny day to relax in the deck chairs and have a cup of tea. And I think all of Cambridge must be here today.
Oh yeah, it's a beautiful afternoon, you know, 20 degrees, sun out, where better to spend your time?
We had a Sunday roast, a chicken salad. They were much bigger portions than traditional British portions, so we were a little taken aback by that.
The deck chairs are part of what makes here unique. People migrate through here. The deck chairs move around, the tables move around. People find their own nice little spot. And I think it works beautifully. I think it's just part of old England.
We're getting ice creams maybe in a minute.
Has the coffee culture invaded here? We do serve proper ground coffee. I suspect that we are going to have to give in to a shush shush wang bang coffee machine at some stage in the future, but perhaps not this year, maybe next.
And Cambridgeshire, of all England, the shire for men who understand. And of that district, I prefer the lovely hamlet, Grantchester.
Robin's ambition of keeping here forever England and the name of Rupert Brooke alive will continue. But on a day like today, as we sit under the sunshine, enjoy this marvellous place of Grantchester. It's just truly, truly fantastic.
Thanks to Charles Bunker of the Orchard Tea Rooms in Grantchester.
Yeah, the Orchard is at 45 Mill Way, Grantchester, and it's open every day of the year, with the exception of a few days around Christmas time. So open every day from 9:30 to 7 in the summer as well. That is a place now guaranteed to remain forever England. And Green Onions introduces our news section, beginning as usual with jobs. Trinity in Trinity Street is looking for a full-time chef de partie. You can phone Cambridge 322 130 for details. And their next-door neighbour, the Cambridge Ivy Brasserie, wants a senior and junior sous chef. You can apply via their website.
On Sunday, Hume Closen takes her wines and cheese to the Newnham Bakery Cafe in Derby Street, and that's from 11 to 4.
Restaurant 22 in Chesterton Road is now open at lunchtimes from Wednesday to Saturday, with three courses for £20 or the five-course tasting menu for £35.
Cambridge Cookery and Bistro have an evening of Asian street food. It's a pop-up hosted by chef Lillian Hu. That's on the 2nd of May from 7 till 10pm and is £45. The focus is on East Asia, China, Hong Kong and Singaporean dishes. On the 19th of May, there is a masterclass called Essential Patisserie with Javier Cervantes. That's on from 11 till 3 and costs £150. To book these events, go to the Cambridge Cookery website.
And the Cambridge Wine Merchants has a gin club night on Tuesday the 1st of May from 7pm. That's in their Cherry Hinton branch. It's £15 and begins at 7pm. So now let's head into the wine bin, Sue.
Cambridge Wine Merchants has a wine tasting of what they call the Valley Beyond Châteauneuf-du-Pape. For example, the wines of Giondas, Vaqueras, Rasto and Carignan. There'll be 9 wines to try, along with cheese and meat. That's from 4 till 6pm at the University Centre in Granter Place on the 5th of May. And it costs £20 in advance or £28 on the night.
And on the 6th of May, there is Ely's first ever wine festival. That's on Sunday of the Food and Drink Festival. You can buy tickets for one of two sessions, 11:30 to 1:30 or 2:30 to 4:30. Tickets are £18 and at no extra charge, you can try over 50 wines from local wine merchants. Several award-winning East Anglia producers will be there too. Tickets are available at elywineevents.co.uk/events.
Looking further ahead, on the 13th of May at Elementum in Hills Road, there's another wine club organised by head sommelier Maxwell Allwood. This one is New Wave South African wines. Book via reservations at restaurantelementum.co.uk.
And finally, looking even further ahead than that, there is a wine and dine evening at Robinson College on the 31st of May, celebrating English wines, and tickets are on their website. And that's all we have time for today. So if you missed bits, or if you'd just like to hear the whole thing all over again, there is a repeat at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon and a podcast early next week.
If you want to get in touch with any news or comment when we're off air, you can email us at flavour@cambridge105.co.uk or contact us on Twitter at flavour105.
And coming up next on Cambridge 105 Radio this afternoon is Bookmark, featuring, amongst other things, debut novelist Ruth Figgis talking about her story of a mother-daughter relationship that spans half a century, but told in reverse. And then at 2 p.m. we've got The Gadget Guide. From 3 till 5 is Saturday Sports, and Mike Pryor returns with a Saturday Soul show at 6. So there'll be plenty more as well, taking you right through the evening. But from Sue and myself, thanks very much for listening. And until the 12th of May,
goodbye.